Chapter 38, Tuesday, December 24th through Wednesday, December 25th, 1776. Christmas is come, hang on the pot, let spits turn round and ovens be hot. Beef, pork, and poultry now provide to feast thy neighbors at this tide. Then wash all down with good wine and beer, and so with mirth conclude the year. Royal Virginia Almanac. I spent the day before Christmas fighting a holly bush with a pair of scissors. Madam required us twigs and berries for her decorating schemes. My morning dash to the prison, pump, and tavern had gone wonderful fast. There were no new messages to pass from Corzine's companions to Captain Morse, and the doctor secured by the rich Bridgebane family had delivered potions and bleedings to all as promised. Corzine was spending most of his days sleeping, but he was not dead. And it was Christmas Eve day. The holly bits were tied with pine branches and set on the sills of the street facing windows. Glass bowls of red berries were set on small tables in the drawing room, library, and the front parlor. Madam had two soldiers hang a ball of mistletoe in the front hall. This provided great merriment amongst the men and some blushing on the part of their wives. I had never seen a house decorated with tree branches to celebrate the birth of the baby Jesus, but it did pretty up the place. The best was when Madam told us to hang dried rosemary throughout. That cut right through the lingering stench of boots and belchings. In keeping with tradition, I was to have Christmas Day free from work. I pondered hard on what I should do with so many hours for myself. Christmas at home had meant eating Mama's bread pudding with maple syrup and nutmeg and reading the Gospel of Matthew out loud whilst Ruth played in Mama's lap. I was miles away from celebrating like that. I tried to bury the remembering, but it kept floating to the top of my mind like a cork in a stormy sea, and foolish tears spilled over. I finally decided to treat myself to a long stroll through all of New York, from the waterfront north to Chamber Street, and a side-to-side wander from the East River to the North River, which some had taken to calling the Hudson. For one day my legs would be my own, not at the beck and call of others. On Christmas morning, Lady Seymour presented me with a new pair of black leather shoes that did not pinch any of my toes. Madam gave the soldier wives each a coin. She gave me nothing. When we returned home from the service at St. Paul's Chapel, Madam explained that my day off would begin as soon as I had finished serving the midday meal. Sarah had cooked it in advance, a sirloin of beef, smoked ham, onion pie, and a plum pudding for dessert. Master and Madam both filled up on the onion pie and hardly touched the fresh baked bread. Lady Seymour ate enough for an undersized mouse. I ate porridge and beef for my Christmas dinner, a right curious combination, but a tasty one. As I cleared away the table, Madam informed me that my day off would begin after I brought in wood and washed up the dishes. Lady Seymour fired off a cannon blast of a glare at her, but Madam pretended not to notice, and the master kept his face planted in his newspaper. There had been heat rising between the two women for days. Madam was prepared to row the aunt to Charleston to get rid of her. After the meal, the master went to order the carriage to take them to some admiral's house for eggnog. Lady Seymour said she was going to rest and required nothing of me. As the lady limped to her chamber and the master disappeared down the stairs, I picked up the tray that held the last of the dishes. Madam poured herself another cup of tea. "One moment, girl," she said. I paused. "Yes, ma'am." Madam said nothing while she stirred the sugar into her tea. She sipped, wrinkled her nose, added another spoonful, stirred, then sipped again. She set the teacup in the saucer and examined the walnut tarts on the plate before her. I stood like a statue holding the tray. Would she take away the rest of my day? Force me to wash the table linens or starch the master's shirts? Madam gave her tea another stir. "You have been idling around the Bridewell prison." My heart stopped. She picked up a tart, considered its scorched bottom, and returned it to the plate. "My husband's aunt says that you visit the prison at her direction, bringing table scraps not good enough for pigs. She declared that forgiving and caring for the enemy is doing the Lord's work." My heart started up again, racing so fast I thought it might escape my body. Madam picked up a second tart and scratched off the scorched bits with her knife before taking a bite. She chewed, sipped more tea, and swallowed. My husband's aunt is a blithering idiot who has completely lost her wits. You should have told me of her requests at once. She finally looked at me, her eyes cold as frozen coins. You represent this house, girl. Your visits could put us under suspicion of having rebel tendencies. I will not be ruined by you, be it through innocence, as Aunt proclaims, or insolence, which I suspect. I forbid you to go to the prison. My arm shook from the weight of the tray as well as her words. She could do anything. Order me to the stocks, another Brandon, or a public whipping of hundreds of lashes. She could beat me herself. She could sell me as she had done Ruth. Only place me with the cruelest master who'd work me to death in days. A pearl of sweat trickled down my cheek. Madam finished the tart and wiped the corners of her mouth with her fingertip. While my husband's aunt lives here, my hands are tied. She reached for another tart. But she'll soon be gone, one way or another, and Elihu will be in England. She popped the entire tart into her mouth, chewed, then licked her fingers. That is the day you should fear, girl.